Please join me in prayer, O Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, Beloved Jesus Christ, Blessed Master, Saints and Sages of all religions, I bow to all of you. Free my life from all obstacles, and give me physical, mental, and spiritual development. Make my mind thy temple. Make my heart thy altar. Make my love thy home. Be thou the only King, reigning on the throne of my consciousness. Amen. Reading from this last month's journal from Mother. Service to all. We serve our little selves. We do not always serve those others around us. And I would like to see more of that in the group. I would like to see us getting to know each other, not in the human sense, but in the divine sense. I would like to see you come together and meditate together, even when I am not around, to speak of God and to sit in silent meditation, to chant, and when somebody has something wrong with them or if they need help, to always be there, ready to help. This is what the Christ taught us to do. He who would be the greatest among you, let that one be the servant of all. Now, all of you are willing to serve me. Many a time, many of you have offered, and you have given me great service. But don't forget that you must serve others as you serve me, because they are too myself, even as you are. Are we not all one in God? And from Papa Ram Dass, titled, Service is Work Done Out of Pure Love. Service fulfills its supreme purpose when it is imbued with the spirit of service. Life fulfills its supreme purpose when it is imbued with the spirit of service. Service is the very perfume of a true life of love and sacrifice. Labor is the natural form of life, because life itself is activity. But when labor is inspired by love, it assumes the name of service. Service for gain, service for reward are the terms commonly employed. Here the significance of service loses its true color and glory. Real service is work done out of pure love and compassion. Service thus rendered liberates life and fulfills it with the joy of the eternal. The expression, do all your actions in the name of and for the sake of God, connotes that life's activities be performed as pure offerings of love and for the fulfillment of love, because love is God and God is love. The mother toils in service of her child through selfless love for the sheer joy of the service. This service demands no return, is content in itself, and is therefore ever permeated with the highest delight of life. Within this very spirit of love that actuates the mother to the careful and unstinted service of her child, enters into the entire movements and actions of life in its dealings with the life of the world. It becomes a veritable embodiment of free, universal and blissful service. Here the pains of service and sacrifice are not only bravely endured, but are also transmuted into pure emotions of joy. Oh, the glory of human life! How blissfully can it be converted into the divine if it is dedicated to the service of God in all beings and creatures of the world. One truth, one life, is the fact about the universe and everything in it. to tune human life to the knowledge of this truth is the secret of the unfettered and free flow of it, along with the channels of divine love and service. And that comes from Divine Life. Yesterday I had the most wonderful and perfect birthday ever. And one of the things that Jill and Carla came up with was that as a birthday present for me, that people would do some act of service, some act of kindness, random kindness for somebody else, and then dedicate it for me. So I got all of this good karma piling up on me for doing nothing at all, just everybody else doing something for me. And then different people wrote about it, and I thought I'd read to you from Ananda Ashram and what was written from there. Reverend and beloved David G., on this auspicious occasion, we offer this Tulsi garland with loving pronouns at your holy feet. The leaves and blossoms gathered from Anandashram Garden carry our loving wishes and prayers for your excellent health and victorious spiritual ministry. The sages of lore have acknowledged the sanctity of the 60th year in one's life as the midpoint of a full human life, which is 120 years. This is according to the yogis. A natural, healthy life should be lived to 120 years old. So, of course, 60 years is the midpoint of that. 60 years is also a time in traditional Vedic culture where there is four divisions in life. And the first aspect of life is living the life of a student, being a good student, learning the lessons in life, preparing yourself for a life as a householder and raising a family. Then about the age of 25 or so, you enter into that life as somebody who's living in a family and fulfilling your duties in that way. And that goes on until your own children are raised and ready to carry on for themselves. And oftentimes around 60 years old is thought to be a time you make the transition into the third stage. And in the third stage, you start to focus not so much on the world, but the things of spirit. You go deeper into the teachings. You take more time away from this world. And you think more deeply upon your life and the purpose for which you were born. And through that, you enter into a deep period of sadhana, spiritual practice, where you focus your attention inward and awaken that divine consciousness. And you may go from temple and spiritual teacher in pilgrimage, taking the energy, taking the consciousness, taking the teachings that are given to you and putting them to work. And so it's not that you haven't lived a spiritual life in the first phase. Where you're a student, you're learning about a spiritual life and how to meditate and how to go deeper. And during the householder years, you continue on with your own spiritual path, even though you have this life of activity in the world. In this third stage, though, you really go deeper, and you dedicate your whole heart, mind, and soul toward that purpose. And it is in this period that you strive to gain perfect realization. And in this four stages of life, the fourth stage then is once you have attained that perfection in spirit, then you reside within that being. You are a blessing to this world and all the people in it. And perhaps you retire into a more remote part of the world where you can just be in that pure spiritual consciousness without anything to hinder you in that. And you feel your complete oneness, and perhaps people come and visit you here and there, but you are completely content within yourself because you have achieved that highest divine consciousness. So this 60 years is seen as a significant milestone, a memorable turning point, a touching reminder of the rich, mellowed life that has earned, which would continue to unfold in years to come. The celebration at this point of life has been a sacred part of the hallowed Vedic culture. It is great joy we join in this glorious chronological celebration through the noble, exalted souls are birthless and deathless. Their lives flow like the perennial Ganges, purifying the hearts and its inhabitants and spread the fragrance of their sweet love and joy all around the jasmine blossoms. Pronouns and love from all of us at Anandashram. And then they have a quote from Eshwar. Beloved Papa says, God, I remember you because you remembered me first. We all pray to you on this holy occasion to continue to love us so that we are truly and fully love you. On this day of days, our sincere prayers for our Trinity to bless you both with good health and cheer, to enlighten the ones who come along from far and near for many a year with loving pronouns, Shruti, Mukta, and Nalini. And from Gargi and Mayatrey, all our love and pronouns to our beloved God brother on this day and all days. Your God sisters are too insignificant to write. You understand our hearts. And so on. So it's wonderful to receive this in our spiritual family, extended spiritual family in India. And I thought I would read you just one of the letters that I was sent that of people doing good deeds for my birthday gift. And this comes from Peter Schultz. Well, I'll start at the beginning. Hello, Carla. Thanks for the reminder. I want to make a contribution, but feel a little funny writing down my good deeds, kind of like trying to get credit for something I should just do quietly. But if it makes David happy, I'm all for it. Since sending you your original email, I picked up the trash along a favorite forest trail so that other folks wouldn't have to look at it, thinking of David, God, and Mother. I paid $1,200 for Shannon's dental surgery because she had no way to pay for it herself, 3 extractions. She'll pay me back when she can, but seeing her out of pain is pretty nice payment all by itself. I landed a friend enough money to get home as his debit card suddenly had no balance after a canceled hotel stay. He was very grateful, and it felt good to help out. I gave a couple at a rest stop on I-5 $20 to help them out. They had a little sign, and the man was playing a nice melody on the flute, Amazing Grace. And his flute was nothing more than a PVC pipe he had cut some holes into, the picture of simplicity. He was older and had one of those craggy, lined faces that looked so worn, but it lit up in a beautiful smile when we interacted, so it wasn't too hard to imagine him as Ram himself in disguise. All these little deeds can't help but bring up feelings of God, the Masters, and of course David, because he does so many wonderful things for us. It is nice to do good for others with that same spirit of service and gratitude. It seems that even though we are trying to help others, we are the great beneficiaries. It's strange, but doing good brings great feelings of gratitude for the one giving. So even though we may not be doing an act with the expectations of reward, we get one anywhere. Ha! Isn't God delightful? So that's from Peter. All the great spiritual masters emphasize leading a life of service. Now, in the beginning, we do this in order to expand our hearts and our minds and our souls. When we think of someone else and do something, not because we will get a reward or recognition of it, because we get joy, because it feels like the right thing to do, it expands our circle of love. One of the things that Swami Satchidananda assigned to us as a means of measuring whether we're progressing on the spiritual path is whether our circle of love has grown during this day. Have we extended that love? Have we extended that light and that peace and that bliss to others? Or do we get around others and we turn into like a clamshell and we close all up? And we may have a pearl inside, but we don't share it with anyone else. When we are like that, we can have a certain amount of peace and joy, but it doesn't become universal. In order to universalize our vision, we have to open these two eyes and look out and see all as our own beloved God, that it is God who is the sole creative intelligence and force that has brought all into being. And therefore, we must say, if that be true, that everything is made up of God's stuff. It is the very essence. It is the very nature. Now, we look out on this world and we see how people act and how they behave towards each other. And why don't we see it more of as a natural manifestation of what we would expect if this was God's universe? And the reason is because in his creation, he has given us free will. More than any other animal, more than any other part of creation, we can choose. We can choose to act selfishly, or we can choose to act with love and compassion. And every day we enter into that choice. Do we choose to be greedy? Do we choose to be loving? Do we choose to do small, kind acts for each other? Or do we withhold ourselves because we're hurt, because we're angry, because we've closed our hearts off, and it doesn't feel like there's anything for us to give, so we give nothing? I remember somebody who had been in the group for a long time was seeing somebody new coming in. It was Jill that was coming in to the group. And suddenly she just seemed to be a part of everything and a center of everything, and this other person always felt like on the outside. And so they asked Jill, they said, well, how did you get there? That's where I've always wanted to be, and yet you're new, and suddenly you seem to be a part of everything. And Jill just said, well, I looked around and just saw if there is anything I could, any way I could serve, in any way that I could give. And it just, all the rest of it just seemed to happen. And the person looked at them with a blank stare and said, oh, and walked away as if they'd been giving nothing at all. When our tanks seem to be empty, we can conceive the idea, well, I don't have anything to give. And maybe we're filled with bitterness. Maybe we're filled with things that are unlovely. And we feel like we can't give anything because we don't have anything. And it's like a log jam that is inside of the heart that won't let any flow go out. And we live in our bitterness, we live in our hurt, we live in our loneliness, and we just never get that log jam unwound. We have to take it apart piece by piece so that the river begins to flow once again and isn't all dammed up. When we do small acts of kindness, when we give love to another, when we give a smile, when we give an encouraging word where it's needed, it's like taking a piece out of that dam and opening it up so that that flow of love, that flow of life, begins to move through us again instead of being all choked up. Now, this is a great principle in life. Because Jesus said, as you give, so shall you receive. But in a human sense, we always think, well, as I receive, then I'll give. And we get into a staring contest with God. Well, you give to me before I give anything. And nothing happens. It's just a standoff. But we don't get anything then. Because we're not giving anything. Whatever we have, if we can give the little bit that we have, and it doesn't take anything, it doesn't take any money to give a smile to someone, to give some words of encouragement to somebody who needs it. It's so easy to get in our own world, and our circle of love doesn't expand. So this notion that as we make this a part of our spiritual practice, And we start to give of ourselves more. We start to let those small acts of encouragement and life begin to flow in us. You know, in marriage, so oftentimes, it is that we start to withhold from one another. We get hurt by what somebody else does or some disappointment. And so we just don't, we say, well, if you're not going to give me that, then I'm not going to give you anything. And suddenly there's a great big old Grand Canyon between two people, and neither one are giving and neither one are receiving. And it becomes a really a terrible, dry place to be. When we can enter into relationship with anyone, our closest or our most the strangers that are in our life, if we can start giving, if we can start serving them as we would serve God and Guru, serve the ones who are closest to you, most loved by you, and serve the stranger as well, you see, then your circle of love is constantly expanding. Sometimes it's easier to give to a stranger than it is to somebody within your own family. And the reason is because we're attached to a certain expectation. You should be different. You should act different. You should say things differently. And when that expectation isn't met, then we close off. We shut down. To reverse that is to say, I am in the business of doing what I do in this world. The only one I'm in charge of is myself. And am I giving? Am I serving? Am I loving? And to begin to give in that way and open up those floodgates. And what you'll experience is exactly what Peter is describing here in terms of as you do these small acts of kindness, then you receive so much. Because now that river of love, that river of life is flowing through you, and you experience its benefits, you experience its qualities as it moves through you and goes out into the world. And the most marvelous thing begins to come into your mind, that the more that you give, the more that you receive. And so then you begin to really learn, as I give, so shall I receive. As I give these things, I receive them, I feel them. And it's not the kind of graspy, I need to try to get it from the world and hang on to it. It's I let it move through me, and that there is infinite life in me. There is infinite love. When it's human love, it all has a balance scales, doesn't it? Well, if I do something nice for you, then I expect something nice back. And if I don't get it, then I feel a little hurt by that. When you love with divine love, there are no balance scales. It's just simply tuning in to the divine life within you. And is that flow moving through you or is it not? And if it's not, you have a problem and you go to work on it. And you get it unstuck. So this is a great principle in life for us to really begin to engender in our own. So his mother was writing here, so many would give to her, but she would notice perhaps here and there that other people just didn't give to each other in the same way. Imagine this entire world living by the principle that as you give, so shall you receive. And by living by the golden rule, to treat others as you yourself would like to be treated. When J.C. Penney started his store, it was called the Golden Rule Store. And he asked all of his employees, I want you to treat each customer the way you yourself would like to be treated when you walk in through the door. Just imagine. Just imagine. And then how that would feel that you're in business in this kind of way. And if you extend that, that as management would treat the employees in the way they themselves would want to be treated if they were employees, employees would treat the management and the owner the same way they would want to be treated if they were the owner of the company or if they were in management. Imagine an entire world living with this principle in mind and in view. How that would change this world. How it would transform it. And the number of laws and things that we all have trying to enforce good behavior, most of them could just go off the books. They wouldn't be required any longer. Now, this doesn't have to be as far away and far-fetched as it might seem today. Because as I was shown in deep meditation one time, just as fear can come through a crowd and sweep it away, and suddenly there's a stampede of people, and people can actually get trampled and killed in such situations. In the same way, light can just sweep across this world, and suddenly people just see the sense of it. They just see that their lives would be transformed and that this world becomes transformed. There's a sociological principle that it doesn't take a majority of people to make a profound change. A small percentage of people who are committed towards a change can enact that, and it will spread. There is a tipping point, and it's only 2, 3, 4% of the population. But suddenly, it becomes in vogue. It becomes the thing to do instead of just living for yourself. Instead of just being selfish, instead of just accruing what you can for yourself and to heck with everybody else, you start to live in this life of service. And just think, as an employee, if you're working in a company or for an organization, and you enter into that and you say, all right, I want to employ this as an employee. I want to serve this company in the same way that if I was the owner, I would want my employees working for me. I'm thinking about the job, how to do it better, how to improve service, how to improve products. And I bring my whole self because it's fun. It's enjoyable now. It's not bitterness. And so through that, I become an excellent employee. And as a result of that, if my current company or organization doesn't recognize that, somebody else will. And I become a more valuable employee, and I just naturally, as an outcome, I'll get rewarded with more money and benefits and so on. And it's not because I've even necessarily set out to do so. It's just the natural thing of people will value you because you've increased that value because you are in service. Now, what happens inside of us? When we take it beyond just setting an intention of doing good things and good deeds for other people, and we really take a look that as we go deeper inside of ourselves, we feel a spontaneous flow of life energy moving through us. We feel this logjam undoing itself. And there's a greater flow of life. There's a greater flow of love. There's a greater flow of light. And we're actively conscious of this as it moves through us. And suddenly, because you're doing service for another and you're feeling this flow of life, you feel joy. You feel joy in the moment in what you're doing. And that it's not because of an outcome. It's because in the action itself, you feel joy. In our human life, everything is about the outcome. Well, I'm doing something now because I expect this outcome. And if I don't get the outcome, I'm disappointed, and that creates a problem. And so Krishna in the Gita, he identifies that attachment to outcomes is the primary problem. It's where the ego consciousness comes in and becomes very mischievous, and it disrupts our peace and our happiness and our joy. Now, of course, we do many things thinking in anticipation there's going to be an outcome. If I sit down with a project, some kind of a craft or something I'm going to make, I do it with the idea I'm going to end up with a product by the end. And I strive to make that product as perfectly in accordance with my thought of what it's supposed to be. So I enter into it with an idea of an outcome. But if I'm very focused on the outcome, I get all tied up in knots. Well, it's not looking the way that I want to look. And every project goes through an ugly duckling stage. And you wonder whether it's going to work out or not and look the way you want it to. But when you are in tune with the movement of life and intelligence flowing through you in the moment, you feel a freedom. You're not tied up in knots. and you get joy from the mere doing. Now, whatever the ultimate outcome is, you leave that up to God. But the moment that you're creating, you're in the pure joy of that creating going on through you. And this is blissful. This is true joy and true life. And then you realize, before, when I was in bitterness, and when I held these resentments, and I had this log jam inside of me, it was hell. I'm doing exactly the same thing, and I feel bliss. I once had, I was moving out of a house, and this person came over, and she had a master's degree program, and she had a prestigious position in an organization, and she helped to clean the house, and there were other people who were there as well, before I was to move. And she was in the bathroom for hours that day, and she just did such a perfect, beautiful job. And as she was leaving that day, she said, "You know, this is the truth. This is the most enjoyable day I've ever had in my life." Now, imagine, you know, it wasn't what she was doing, but it was in the spirit that she was doing it with that gave her real joy. Now, if we could enter into this world, no matter what we do, no matter what our position in life is, and we do it in a spirit of service and feel that kind of joy, we let go of the results. The results will accrue naturally. But what we tune into is in the present, in this moment. And you know, we can go through an entire life and be distracted from life, and never really live it, never really be fully present to any particular moment, because our minds are so busy going forward into the future or reaching back into the past. And we never really live life, not really. And so this is our opportunity in life to begin to expand our circle of love, to begin to feel these logs in the log jam in our own heart, in our own soul, in our own spirit, that have kept life from fully moving through us, from us really living life and enjoying life. Sometimes people think of living a spiritual life, well, you don't have any joy, you don't have, you know, it's hardship, it's dull, it's anything but. You're tapping into the very source of life. And it's like grabbing on to the end of a 50,000 volt cable. It's alive. I wrote a poem not too long ago that speaks to this. It was last August, I guess, when I wrote this. And it's entitled, "The Power of the Eternal." Oh, my dearest one, yours is an awe-inspiring power. You are the power of a supernova and nebulous birth factory of stars. Through inner attunement, I touch the power of blazing suns. I exist in the dazzling energy of a tiny atom. Verily, it all exists in me. Do you sense the truth of what I say? And yet, in fear and awe, you draw away and deny yourself the infinite, thereby growing poorer day by day. Even now, you can change this. You may begin to expand and embrace this earth and all of space, dissolving all that previously bound you. Be in awe, but not fear. And in the vast stillness of being, know without doubt the eternal dwells within you. So the greatest gift that you can give to me is your own aspiration for growing in God and in your conscious union with God. God, of course, is not many of the old concepts that we grew up with. God is that most sacred spot right within your own heart, right within your own soul. It's closer than your own breath. It's closer even than your own thought. And yet, it is vast, it is infinite, it is the creative principle that has brought everything into being. It is an entire universe to be explored and beyond, and it goes beyond, and there is an infinite array of aspects of God. And so when you enter in this life, you never get to the bottom of it. You never explore it all. How could you? In one tiny little lifetime, how could you know everything that the infinite is? And so it is the most exciting, the most challenging, the most thrilling, the most blissful journey that you could ever embark upon. And you do it within the laboratory of your own soul. And you start out by quietly investigating that eternal spark of spirit that exists. It may be buried under mounds and heaps of old habits and old ways of thinking and old attachments, but it's there because it is a gift that cannot be stayed, it cannot be changed, it cannot be drowned, it cannot be burned, none of it. It can never be sullied by anything that you have ever done. It is pure, it is perfect, and it is your true self. So let us enter into that kingdom deeply, with awe, of course, but not with fear, with joy, and find that bliss that is bubbling up within you, now and always. Will you pray with me? Oh, Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, I feel the wonder and the beauty of Thy perfect love, surging and flowing through this heart, being in service to one and all. It is my joy. It is my bliss. It is my fulfillment to live a life of service now and forevermore. Amen. Pranams, I bow to the light within you.